thankful for the opportunity I have to stand before you this morning. As I typically mention, it is not... Turn this on. It is not my desire to stand before you and share anything that I would have you to hear, but that God would speak to you through my message. You know, we can study, prepare, and think we have everything figured out and the perfect message to deliver. And that's exactly when we begin to fail, because we start to believe that it's of ourselves. Anything good that comes is of God. As I typically like to do, I'm going to start out my message with a question. Which somewhat falls in line with my introduction that I just gave. How do we tame our tongue? So I'll let you ponder that for a second. Lord willing, I will answer that throughout the course of this message, but then we'll circle back at the end. How do we tame our tongue? Let's look in James chapter 3. And we're going to go ahead and read the whole chapter. James chapter 3 says, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive a greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend, not in word, the same is perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing, my brethren. These things ought not to be so. Doth the fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine figs. So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh? Who is a wise man endued with knowledge among you? Let him shew out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." So the tongue, or our speech in general, mentioned numerous times throughout the Bible. Even within the book of James, I believe every chapter mentions the tongue or our form of speech. We can look back throughout the Bible. I would venture to say the second sin recorded in the Bible is through speech. If you look in Genesis, Genesis chapter 3, get ahead of myself a little bit here, but Genesis chapter 3, we see after the fall of man, after Adam and Eve had eaten of the fruit, God confronts Adam, and what does Adam do? He attempts to blame God and says, it's your fault. Now, was it really God's fault? No, it was the desire of man. Our tongue can be very powerful. Our speech carries weight that I believe oftentimes we don't even realize. I want to draw special attention to verse 2 there, but I don't want to go into great detail about it at this point. It says, for in many things we offend all. If any man offend, not in word, the same as a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Remember the second half of that verse there, bridle the whole body. And we're going to come back and look at that. Verse 3 says, behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. So, Bethany, growing up, when we were in North Carolina, did some horse lessons and learned at least a portion of the different pieces of tack is what it's called that horse riders use. But bit is essentially a small piece of metal that goes in a horse's mouth, sits above the tongue, and then attaches to the halter or the harness, and then you have the reins that come off of that, right? And through that small piece of metal in the horse's mouth, you can control the movement of that horse. You can control their head. By controlling the head of the horse, you control what the horse is doing. So that's the rider that controls what he wants the horse to do. So, as the pastor of the anchor, should James put a bridle or a bit in all of our mouths to direct us and to tell us what to do? Probably wouldn't work out too well. I don't know that I would like to have a piece of metal shoved in my mouth to control me. Oftentimes, maybe I should, but I don't know. Don't know that it would be extremely accepted. Aside from that, I don't know that it would be appropriate. Amen. Essentially, by doing that, we would be giving Pastor James the glory and honor to control our lives as opposed to God. No disrespect intended towards Pastor James, and hopefully I can relate this in a manner that will not bring so upon him. Or James is man. He is capable and guilty of sin just like us. As well as am I, as well as any other pastor, we have visitors here. We should pray for our pastors. We should put them all on a pedestal of prayer, not a pedestal of praise. Any, whether it's Sunday school teacher, whether it's preacher, whether it's pastor of a church, I would venture to say that anyone in any of those capacities of sound doctrine would much rather prefer the prayers of the people as opposed to the praise of the people. Verse 4, behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. So once again, we see an example of here we have ships, and the fact that these massive ships controlled with relatively a small, in comparison to the size of the vessel, a small rudder. Aircraft, similar concept with aircraft. We're out of worked on jet engines for the past 20 years. Not extremely versed in the structure of the aircraft per se, but have picked up a little bit along the way. You know, you have all of your flight control surfaces that essentially control the guidance of the aircraft, I guess is how I put it. All right. So you have the jet engines, my specialty. All that does is pretty much push it forward. But then you have all your flight control surfaces. You have massive wings on the aircraft, right? The flight control surfaces on the wings themselves is relatively small in comparison. Depending on the aircraft, you have some on the tail as well. And then even with the F-22, it gets even more complicated because the engine actually ties into the directional steering as well. But for the most part, aircraft, just like ships, controlled with a very small portion of the whole body. Verse 5, even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. So here we see, in comparison to what we've already looked at, the tongue itself is a relatively small portion of the body. However, it can have great and lasting impacts by what we say. It can be used for good, it can be used for bad. Oftentimes, it's used for bad, unfortunately. Moving down, verse 7, actually, end of verse 5 there, says, behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. So, as I was saying, our speech, our words, our thoughts carry weight, significant weight, regardless of what, whether we're the pastor of a church, whether we're a Sunday school teacher, whether we're a member of the church. You know, the world around us realizes that and knows that and looks at us, looks to see if our words match our actions. Verse 7, for every kind of beast and of birds and serpents and things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. So, as I was studying through this, verse 7 there, initially caused me a little bit of hang up because I'm reading through it and it says hath been tamed of mankind. So I'm thinking, there's a lot of pretty dangerous animals in the world that I don't want to tame. I'm not interested in taming, right? I spent some time over in Guam and did quite a bit of surf fishing and managed to catch a couple sharks, but that was about the extent of how adventurous I want to get. And I was trying to recall and think, and I was unfortunately trying to draw on current day examples of different wild beasts that have been tamed. But once again, the Bible provides us a pretty good example of these beasts that have been tamed. Noah and the flood. Huh? I don't recall reading of any casualties or any mishaps throughout that time. So yes, once again, the Bible proves accurate. Verse 8, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. So this might hold the answer to our question, how do we tame our tongue? No man can do it. It's an impossible mission, right? But wait, God tells us to do something that we can't do? That doesn't sound right. So maybe that's not the answer. Let's keep reading. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing, my brethren. These things ought not to be so. Doth the fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh? So here we see some comparisons, I believe. You know, we've got an example of a fountain and an example of fig trees and a couple different examples listed here, right? And it's comparisons, right? So I believe the point here is that once God enters our heart and starts to control our thoughts, our desire should be to let God into our heart to control our thoughts and to convey through our speech His glory and honor, not anything we could do of ourselves. Verse 13, who is a wise man endued with knowledge among you, let him chew out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. The wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So here we see, once again, a comparison, I believe, of earthly wisdom as compared to heavenly wisdom. You know, and this world around us will attempt to convince us that we're pretty smart. Attempt to convince us that we have it all figured out. And ultimately, that's the plan of Satan, is to convince us that we have it all figured out. The latter part of those two, that passage there, verse 17 and 18, is an example that we should strive for. So going back to the original question, how do we tame the tongue? How do we tame our tongue? I suppose it was a bit of a trick question, because we don't tame our tongue. We aren't able to tame our tongue without God's help. we allow our desires to be placed above the desires of God, we will not be able to bring God glory and honor. Matthew chapter 15. Matthew 15, verse 10 says, "And he called the multitude and said unto them, Hear and understand, not that which goeth into the mouth defileth man, but that which cometh out of the mouth, this defileth man. Then came his disciples and said unto him, Knowest thou that the Pharisees were offended after they heard this saying? But he answered and said, Every plant which my heavenly Father hath not planted shall be rooted up. Let them alone, they be blind leaders of the blind, and if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch. And then answered Peter and said unto him, Declare unto us this parable. And Jesus said, Are ye also yet without understanding? Do not ye yet understand that whatsoever entereth in at the mouth goeth into the belly, and is cast out into the draught? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart, and they defile the man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man, but to eat with unwashed hands defileth not a man." So the natural state of man is sinful. Our natural desire is towards sin, towards thoughts of this world. Whatever we allow our minds and our hearts to focus on is what will be replicated and come back out. By controlling what goes in, we can help control what comes out. But not without the help of God. Matthew chapter 12. Verse 34 says, O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account, therefore in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Ultimately, we will answer for the things that we've said. We'll be held accountable for the things that we've said. Through the help of God, we can control our witness to this world. We can either, by our choice, use it for destruction, or we can use it for good. But we need God's help.